Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. Such a treat to be here, really, and to see all of you taking care of your lives in this way, of all the choices of things you could do, taking care of your lives by being here and coming to sit and to hear the Dhamma. It's a beautiful thing. So I want to speak a little bit today about giving and generosity. And there are lots of reasons to do that, one of which is that we are coming up on, in Theravada Buddhism, we are coming up on the season called the Katina season. So we have been, we are currently in what's called Vasa, we're in the rains retreat. And during the summer rains in India, the Buddha asked the monastics to stay close to the monasteries and the temples and practice well, so as not to damage the crops during the rainy season. And so we keep that calendar, and we're in the middle of Vasa, and we commit to being in the monastery, except for being away a few days for teaching, like this, for the period from the full moon in July until the full moon in October. And then after that, there are all these very joyous celebrations and almsgiving ceremonies, in particular, giving of cloth to the monks so that they could have fresh robes for their pilgrimages for when they set out to go and then teach after this period of intense meditation and study. And so, and this year at Aloka Vihara, actually we'll be having our 10th anniversary celebration together with our almsgiving ceremony in October. So it's a big year for us. And we have lots of planning going on for that. And then, of course, there's the holiday season also. There are the Christian holiday season that happens later in the year. So we're coming into the season of giving. That's one reason to talk about it. Another reason is because there's an organization that I'm involved with that you actually had some information here about, and so maybe you're also already involved with, which is called Buddhist Global Relief. And I want to talk a little bit about that and about the good work that they're doing closer to the end of my talk. But perhaps most importantly, the reason to talk about giving and generosity is because of the frequency with which the Buddha himself spoke about it, at least according to the records that have come down to us in what we know as the Nikayas, right, which is the old Pali texts, and the Agamas, which are the Chinese translations of those very early texts, right? So part of what we call the Sutta Pitaka, the discourses, the basket or group of teachings of the Buddha. So in these records, we find the Buddha talking, speaking over and over again, giving various kinds of teaching about giving and about generosity. And he spoke about giving in lots of different ways. He spoke about giving, for example, giving the gift of fearlessness by living an ethical life. So by being upright in your life and being ethical, others would feel confident in being around you, would not have to fear you, would know that you are a person who would treat them well as best you could. He spoke about the gift of presence. He said, friends in the Dhamma are actually the most important ingredient, having friends in the Dhamma. So our presence together and the support that creates for our path was something that the Buddha also spoke often about. But today I want to focus very specifically on what the Buddha had to say about giving material things, giving financial resources or giving material things. Because he had a lot to say about that. It makes sense that he would talk about this because the Buddha also expressed the idea that greed is one of the most pervasive problems that human beings face and is something that can be directly addressed by our practice, our meditation practice, and our practice off the cushion. And so one of the teachings that has struck me very recently about this is related to joy. So the other thing that we often hear about the Buddha is the Buddha talking about sorrow and talking about suffering and talking about death. And yet the Buddha also talked about joy. In fact, he talked about many different kinds of joy. There are several Pali words that relate to joy. And with regard to giving in particular, he said, when you give, you might feel joy before you give, when you first set the intention to give. You might feel joy at the time of giving, and you might feel joy after giving, at all those three times. All those times. So in this first case, of feeling joy when you first set the intention to give, it reminds me a lot of my childhood. So I grew up in a Latin household in which Christmas was a big deal, a really big deal. And I remember feeling excited when I would find a gift that I thought was really good for somebody, right? So this might have happened to you, right? You find that funny t-shirt or some trip or some book or some cooking implement that you know that someone is going to really enjoy. And just that idea can bring some joy to you too. So setting this intention to give and the enjoyment that comes from that kind of anticipation can fuel our practice. And then he said, at the time of giving. So there you are, and you follow through on your intention. You feel good about having followed through on that intention. And maybe that's well received. Maybe you get to actually experience something of that person's joy in the receiving too. Right? And then finally, afterward. This is actually something I really want to emphasize with you. So after giving, you would feel, the Buddha said, elated, perhaps, about your own giving. So this is a kind of joy called pamoja. There's a Pali word for this. It means joy in reflecting on your own good actions. So why is this important? Because in order for us to make progress on the path, in order for us to find peace in our hearts and wisdom in our hearts and minds, we need to believe in our own goodness. We need to experience that. We need to remind ourselves that we can do this. That we can do this. So I'll give you an example of this. This is a story that I love to tell. Hopefully it will also bring you a bit of a smile. So in the tradition, we go out and collect food donations. It's called alms rounds. And in particular, what we do there at the Vihara is we go to the farmer's market, usually two by two. Aya, Himsa, and I, we're the two ones that usually raise our hands first for going out to the farmer's market and chat with the folks who are the vendors there, chat with the folks who are visiting there, and we go with our monastic bowls and receive some food donations. And we were there one day for the alms collection round, and there was a little girl, very little girl, like maybe 3 or 4 years old. And she had on, I remember her distinctly because she had on her, her Saturday sunflower hat, this enormous wide brim hat with these bright sunflowers on it. And she was with two other women, a woman who looked like could be her mom. It's hard to make assumptions about family units these days, but could have been her mom, and a woman even older than that, maybe her grandma. And so she's with these two women, and she's holding her mom's hand, and grandma comes up to Ahimsa and I and gives us a donation in our bowls, and the little girl's watching, and she's literally holding her mom's leg, like arms wrapped completely around her mom's leg, and she's kind of behind mom and like a little curious and maybe also a little shy, maybe also a little afraid, kind of what's going on here, right? She's kind of hiding behind her mom. And I'm watching this. I'm a mom. My daughter's 29 now, so I'll tell you a story about my daughter later. But I'm watching this intently to see what's going on with her. And they, grandma gives her a donation, we give her a blessing, we chat a bit, and they walk away. And just a few minutes later, they walk back, and the little girl is now holding a bag of onions. A bag of onions about bigger than her head, really. And she walks up to me, and I lean down with my bowl, and she puts the bag of onions in my bowl with a little smile, right? So before she had this very shy and kind of worried face, now she gives a little smile, and she puts the bag in the bowl. And again, give her a little blessing, and say goodbye, and they walk away. But before they leave, she turns around, and with this megawatt smile, elated. And I said to her, I called out, and I said to her, that's what it feels like. Don't forget that that's what it feels like. So giving brings us out of ourselves. It brings us out of ourselves in a way that elicits this kind of joy. They're not Buddhist. They're not all that concerned with what it is that I do when I'm sitting on my cushion, or even knowing that I'm sitting on my cushion, right? It's about that interaction. So it was a beautiful moment. And I bring this up again because joy is a very important part of our practice. If you've been practicing for a while and you go through a period, or maybe you start out and you go through a period where you're not experiencing joy in your practice, it can be a hard slog. It can be difficult to persist under those conditions. It can be tough. But when you find your joy in your practice, then it kind of lightens your spirits, and you're okay, you're willing to do the work. You're willing to hang in there for yourself and for the people that you are practicing with. So this is why the Buddha points at pamoja, at remembering the joy, remembering the good that you're doing in the world. And as he does with many, many things, the Buddha also turns things totally upside down. I love when he does this. And in fact, that's one of the phrases that we see very often in the suttas. Ah, Master Gotama, you have turned what was upside down upright. Because the Buddha talks about giving as a form of wealth. Generosity as a form of wealth. Now think about that. So usually it's the other way, right? You think, I'm giving and therefore I have less. But the Buddha says no. That there are five forms of true wealth. Faith, ethics, learning of the Dhamma, generosity, and wisdom. Five forms of true wealth. So there's a turning that can happen. There's something about the way that we think about things, material things, financial things, that shifts, that has to shift in order for this to be true. in order for generosity to become a big part of our life. So I'm going to tell you one more little girl story, and that will hopefully help me to give you the example of what it is that needs to shift before the giving can begin. So when my daughter was little, she was probably about 7 years old, and we were living in a small apartment complex, and she had a friend named Alicia. And she and Alicia were best buddies, inseparable. Like, I had to make sure that she did her homework before Alicia showed up to the house, because otherwise it wouldn't happen. They spent every waking moment together as best they could. And she and Alicia, Alicia lived just around the corner from us, basically, in this apartment complex. Anyway, they were super cute together, and everything was fine. And then one day, Kayla and I were going to go out somewhere, and I said, okay, babe, put your shoes on. This is in Miami, and actually just outside of Miami in Pembroke Pines, Florida, north Miami. And I said, okay, babe, put your sandals on. We're gonna go. And she said, I don't have my sandals. These sandals that I had bought for her about 2 weeks earlier. She said, I don't have my sandals. And I said, well, what happened to your sandals? She said, oh, I gave them to Alicia. I said, well, okay, I'll talk to you about that later. Just get your shoes on because we're going to go. And she said, no, I gave all my shoes to Alicia. All my shoes. So you can imagine what I thought at that moment, right? Mom is not thrilled. Mom was not thrilled. But she's seven, you know, so there's only a certain degree of upset that could happen here. So I sat her down on the bed, and I sat down next to her, and I said, okay, we're going to have a conversation about this, because obviously we're not going anywhere because you have no shoes. So I said, you know, like, what's up? You know, does Alicia's family not have enough money to buy her shoes? Or, like, you know, did she ask you for your shoes? I mean, what really? Like, what happened here? And Kayla, that's my daughter's name, Kayla turned to me, and she said, oh, Mommy, to me, they're just my old shoes. But to Alicia, they're a gift, and it makes her happy. To Alicia, they're a gift, and it makes her happy. So there was Kayla teaching me all about mudita, right? Empathetic joy. One of the four, what we call divine abodes or sublime abidings, one of the four states of body and mind that the Buddha described as immeasurable, and of such power that they could lead us to both the deepest states of concentration and incredible insight. So empathetic joy, feeling joy about somebody else's joy. So for one, the math is really good, right? If you only feel joy about your own joy, then that's much more limited possibilities than if you are able to engage and enjoy the joy of many other people, right? Billions of people on the planet. But again, also to see something more there. So empathetic joy, understanding, enjoying what's happening for that other person. But the step before that Kayla was also schooling me on was, they're just my old shoes. They're not her identity. They don't define her. They don't define her relationship with Alicia. They don't have some kind of meaning or some... She's not acquiring wealth by having lots of shoes in her closet. Right? They're just her old shoes. So what is that but a recognition of impermanence? Fundamentally, the Buddha said, all things must pass through your hands. Must pass through your hands. Whether in death or in life. We know this, right? We know this. You can't take it with you. So the question before us as practitioners is, how do we have that going from us become a wholesome thing? Become a support to our practice? Become an insight into the true nature of things? How can that go together? It's fundamental. It's fundamental to the process of relinquishing greed. That's why it's a true form of wealth. So I'll give you I'll share with you the quote from the Anguttara Nikaya, so from the Number of Discourses, which I mentioned the five kinds of wealth for you, so it's from the Book of Fives, obviously. And he said, specifically for a noble disciple who lives at home. Specifically. So this is a teaching for all of you, folks who don't live in a monastery. He says, the one who understands generosity as a form of wealth is rid of stinginess, is open-handed, is loving letting go. Or as the Zen master who ordained me, my teacher, Sekiharada Roshi, used to like to say, giving is enacting non-attachment. Very simply. Very simply. It doesn't mean you don't value the thing. That's not what it means. But it does mean that you understand that having that thing doesn't define you. It doesn't make you what you are. Because what you are is a set of phenomena that's shifting and changing at all times. And that is inexorable. So until you find your peace with that and your harmony with that, there's no thing that will help. So generosity becomes this much deeper practice. This much deeper practice. It has the joy. It has these great, vast, sublime abodes of enjoyment, of other beings' joy. And it has this very, very deeply penetrating teaching about impermanence built within it. So thankfully, Alicia gave some of the shoes back, and Kayla and I could go out. And it wasn't that her family was so poor that they needed all of the shoes, thankfully also. And that's true too. It's not about shaming you for needing to have what you need to have. Right? But it is about gaining some clarity. Gaining some clarity about what's really going on in this body and mind and what's essential in order to progress in understanding that and finding your peace with that. So, in the Buddha's time, there were these women called the Teris, the awakened women of the Buddha's time. And there's a book called the Terigata, their gatas, their poems about their progress on the path or their awakenings. And there's a new book that's coming out in February by a good friend of ours, Maddie Weinstein, Weingast, rather. And I and Anabodhi has had a hand in helping with that, and we are so moved that he has you could say, reinterpreted these old poems from the Terry's. And they're, I really, really have to say, they are really, really moving poems. But in particular, what I want to point out is Suba, the goldsmith's daughter, is the one who says in her poem, "Know a closed fist for what it is, because no one is immune. Know a closed fist for what it is, because no one is immune." In greater or lesser degree, it's something that we can all practice with. It's something that we can all deeply practice with. And finally, the last thing I want to leave you with is a little bit from the sutta that I was first speaking about, the three kinds of joy, because in that sutta, the Buddha also says, if while giving you settle the mind with trust in that in the fact that this is a wholesome thing to be doing, trust in the person that you're giving it to do something wholesome with it, then that is success in the act of offering. Joy in the intention, trust in the interaction, and joy in the reflection. That is success in the act of offering. And so it's in that regard that I want to talk a little bit about Buddhist Global Relief, because BGR is an organization that was started by Bhikkhu Bodhi, a very, very esteemed, respected practitioner, monk, teacher, and translator of these great tomes of the Buddha's teachings from the Pali. And Bhikkhu Bodhi's students got together back in 2008 and started this organization in order to follow through on the Buddha's teachings. And the Buddha very specifically speaks about food when he talks about giving and about benefiting beings, actual nutrition for beings. For example, he said, if you so much as throw out your dishwater on the ground and do it with the intention of benefiting the beings who live there, that is a benefit to you, to your karmic stream. He said, if you knew what I knew about sharing food, you would never have a meal without sharing that meal with someone, even a bite of it. So they put together this organization around feeding the hungry. And BGR does really good work with very relatively little, small amounts of money. I see people nodding their heads, maybe you know more about this organization. It's great. But I will tell you that in particular, they got involved with the UN's movement on educating women and children as well, because as the studies show and as we've seen around the world, when women are educated or when they're able to help the family bring in more income, then the family is less likely to be impoverished, less likely to be malnourished. She's less likely to be sold into the sex trade and various other things that can happen. So they, in addition to their mission about feeding folks, also have a mission about educating women and girls. And so when the UN put together the Every Woman, Every Child initiative back in 2016, BGR made a commitment to them. And the commitment they made was within 5 years, they would spend $1.6 million and they would provide services or food to 16,000 people with that money. That was a commitment they made over a 5-year period of time. And in March of this year, so about halfway through the period of time that they had committed to with the UN, they took a measurement of how they were doing in their commitments, and they found that they'd actually already exceeded that commitment. In less than 2.5 years, they have given $1.84 million around the world and provided food and services to 30,000 people with that tiny amount of money. When I went on the walk, so the walk was here in San Francisco for a number of years, and maybe some of you went on it, and that's actually how I met Aya Santusca. That's how I met the very first Theravada nun ever, because Aya Santusca and her son Ajahn Guna came to the door of San Francisco Zen Center while I was living there to organize the walk. I think that was like 2008 or 2009, around that time frame. Anyway, the walk is now in the main walk for the Bay Area. There are two of them, one in San Jose, which happened this past March or April, I think it was, and then the one that is happening in Berkeley on October 5th. So it's the same day as your potluck. I promise you can get here back for the potluck. The walk starts at 12. We walk from 1 o'clock. And what we do is we go from temple to temple. And so we start at Dharma College, which is a Tibetan practice center, and then we go to the Pure Land, Berkeley Buddhist Temple, and visit the Jodo Shinshu folks, and then we'll go to the Berkeley Zen Center, and we'll come back to Dharma College. So it's about a 2.5-mile walk, and it'll take a couple of hours because we'll stop. But anyway, last year, we had a representative from one of the organizations that BGR works closely with, and they offer services in many, many different countries, places that are obvious and places that might not be so obvious. So Cambodia, Sudan, Haiti, India, and also Detroit and New York City and lots of places around the world. Right now, I think they have 27 or 29 projects in process. And the woman from the Haitian, one of the two Haitian organizations that they work with, came and spoke about the school lunch program where 20% of the kids were graduating. And they went from that in 3 years to 80% of the kids graduating from school because most of them weren't even getting one meal a day. And then they started getting one meal a day thanks to BGR. So if you want to get involved, if you want to participate, there is some information over there on the table. There's a way to sign up for emails. You can have a look. You can come on the walk. You can donate to support the walk. You can get involved in lots of different ways. So I put a lot of trust in that organization, and I'm the organizer for the walk this year in Berkeley, and hopefully next year and beyond. And the other thing I want to say is, the Buddha also said, if you give, as in here, at San Francisco Insight or at other places, if you give to folks who have conquered greed, hate, and delusion, or are on the path of relinquishing those three so-called poisons or those three difficulties, then, and you give it with the joy and the trust, that the benefit of that is immeasurable. Because it goes on, right? Because it passes from one person to the next. That's how Buddhism has come to us after 2,600 years. It passes from one person to the next, and we help each other out. I was not exaggerating when I said to you that the Buddha said, Ananda, you maybe have heard this story. His attendant, his long-time attendant, Ananda, went to the Buddha and said, you know, I finally figured it out. I figured out that spiritual friends are half of the spiritual life. And the Buddha said, Ananda, no, don't say that. Spiritual friends are the whole of the spiritual life. Because otherwise, how would you know? It comes to us through our spiritual friends.